folks. You're tuned to Morning Dew here on WBAI-FM 99.5 in New York City. Listener sponsored and commercial-free radio. And we're streaming worldwide on the global web, which is WBAI.org. And thank you so much for tuning in. And I'm very pleased to say that we have on the phone with us Eric Krasno, lead guitarist of the funk, rock, and soul power trio, Soul Live.
What's up, everybody?
How you doing, Eric?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Great. Eric, better known as Kras to his friends and fans, right?
Yep.
Kras plays along with Alan Evans on drums and Neil Evans on organ and piano in Soul Live.
Yes, sir.
All right. Soul Live is going to be appearing on October 2nd in New York City as part of the Royal Family Ball at Terminal 5 in New York with the whole Royal Family, huh?
Yeah, for this show, we're kind of pulling everybody, you know, out for this one. We've got Nigel Hall, who's one of our artists on Royal Family Records, Lettuce, Soul Live, Talib Kweli, the rapper, is going to guest on a few tunes, and John Scofield will be there. And Big Sam from New Orleans, the trombone player extraordinaire. And Christian Scott, also from New Orleans, on trumpet. And then we'll have the Shady Horns there. The list kind of goes on and on. We'll have a few other special guests as well. So it'll be a packed night.
Sounds like an extravaganza.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time. I'm hoping I can make it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I recommend it.
Yeah. So, okay, now Soul Live has toured the globe over the last decade, spanning everything from small rock clubs to major festivals and everywhere from Africa, Russia, Brazil, and it says Japan 9 times on your website.
Yeah, actually, I think it's even more than that now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but, yeah, we get to Japan quite a bit. We have a strong following there, which is great.
I was going to ask, how is the audience over there? Do you find... What's your impression of audiences worldwide, you know, as they differ? Or,
you know, Japan is amazing. I mean, they're such huge supporters of the arts and music, and especially jazz and soul music. And I mean, even since our first album came out, they've really supported us quite a bit. You know, we've had, you know, sold a lot of records there, and our tours have always been really successful. So it's kind of a mainstay for us. You know, we go there at least once or twice a year. So it's awesome, you know. And the more we travel out, you know, it's also, because, you know, instrumental, you know, we're primarily instrumental music, so, you know, it translates everywhere. You know, we've been to Brazil quite a bit and throughout Europe, and we're going back to Europe, or we're going to London again this month, in October, and then planning a European tour early in 2011. So, yeah, we get around. We love traveling.
That's great. And, of course, you're currently, in the last 24 or so hours, you've made a major new release with Rubber Soul Live, correct?
Yeah. It's all, you know, we got together earlier this year and recorded 12 tracks. I think we ended up putting 11 on the record of all Beatles tunes. And it's all just organ trio, really bare bones. We just kind of went in the studio and the three of us and just set up, and pretty much the whole record is live in the studio.
Yeah.
It was a great project. We had a lot of fun doing it.
Yeah, I'm loving listening to it. Thank you for sending it. And it's, of course, just to talk about the album a little bit, some of the songs, get a song like Eleanor Rigby. You've had everybody from Ray Charles to Aretha Franklin to Jerry Garcia has... many, you know, have covered that song, and
right.
Have any of those versions had any effect on your approach to the song, or was it?
You know, not really. We pretty much all that we listened to were Beatles versions of pretty much all of the tunes that we did. So, you know, we just kind of tried. Some of them we took them into our own world and revamped the tunes. But for the most part, I would say we did pretty true renditions to the originals, at least, you know, just adapted to our format and kind of just put our Soul Live kind of sound to it.
Yeah, Rubber Soul Live is a wonderful concept, and it's a really good listen, and I highly recommend it. And, of course, it's available everywhere, right?
Yeah. You have iTunes, Amazon. You can order it on vinyl through Amazon or at certain retailers and stuff. They'll have it.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, I've been listening. I got turned on to your band. I have to thank Drew Frankel from Woodstock Radio, Radio Woodstock. And originally I met him at WMFO up in Boston, and he's the one who kind of pointed me in the direction of Soul Live, and I want to thank him for that, because I really came to your music through downloads, and you know, and I've been turned on to a lot of bands this way, where, you know, you have allowed your music to go out there by the tapers, and it really gets the word out on your music, doesn't it?
Absolutely. You know, we were hip to that pretty early on. We were one of the first bands, like, with a website. We actually had a website before we had gigs. Alan was on top of that pretty early on. And, you know, we were all about it from the very beginning. Like, you know, people taping the shows, trading the shows, and I think that that's helped us tremendously. You know, of course, you know, we rely more on our touring than our record sales, you know. But I think overall, you know, the downloading and the internet has helped us, you know, tremendously.
That's great to hear. And I'll tell you, you know, when you listen to live renditions of what you've done with things like Eleanor Rigby, I Want You, She's So Heavy medley, in a live setting, it's a real rock and roll experience.
Absolutely. And, you know, even since we've recorded, I love the album, but, you know, I really encourage people to come check it out live, because we've kind of, you know, now that we've played the tunes for 6 months or so, it's really taken on a new life as far as the live versions of everything. You know, they really have, like, come alive. So.
Absolutely. I've been listening to so many of your downloads and really digging them, and cool. We're going to be playing some of those in the program. This is a recorded interview, of course, but I'll be putting together this interview along with some of your live material and some of your recorded materials on Saturday night, September 18th. I'll be on the air with all this, so.
Great.
Yeah, and of course, people can see you live at Terminal 5 on October 2nd. Let's remind folks. So they can see Soul Live, Lettuce, Nigel Hall, everybody. It's going to be great. John Schofield, it's going to be great.
Yeah, the whole crew will be there.
And so I heard some crazy synthesizer sounds at the end of She's So Heavy on Rubber Soul Live. That must have been Neil.
You know, really, we only really did organ and bass. You know, it's probably guitar that you're hearing.
Oh, really?
A lot, like the wah-wah guitar, yeah.
Is there any MIDI work that you ever utilize? Any
synthesizer? You know, not really on that record.
No.
We pretty much did bass, organ, guitar, and I think there may be piano on one or two tracks, but we pretty much cut it live. But then I remember on I Want You, I added another lead guitar, like a high guitar part, to kind of cover that. But, yeah, we tried to go pretty much organic on this record, you know. And
very much so. I was going to say that, you know, just to draw an analogy of style of production quality, I kind of, to me, your production quality reminds me of Derek Trucks, the way he approaches music too, where it's, you know, basic instrumentation and not a lot of overdubs, not a lot of post-production, but real raw live music, right?
Yeah, that's what we try to do. You know, we play so much together live that our chemistry is there. So it's just about kind of capturing the right moments, you know.
And I'll tell you, I'm very intrigued by Neil's keyboard bass riffs, with Paul McCartney being a pretty tough act to follow with as bass lines go.
Yeah, it was an interesting process, because I learned a lot about each of them as musicians. And we also researched a little bit about how the records were made and whatnot. I found it interesting that Paul McCartney laid his bass lines down last, usually, to kind of find the spaces in between the vocal lines and the drums and whatnot. And I found that pretty interesting, because usually the bass and the drums are laid down first, you know, in a lot of cases. So, but it makes sense to me, because bass lines are so melodic, you know. Find that out.
And then you get into a song like My Guitar, While My Guitar Gently Weeps, with such a storied history. Were you feeling some of that when you were laying down the track?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's you know, you're dealing with pretty heavy tunes here and heavy musicians. So, you know, all of it was, you know, we had to deal with it carefully. But, you know, once we picked out the tunes, we just kind of went for it, you know, and it was But it was fun. That was one of the really fun tunes to play for me because I got to kind of let it all go, you know, at the end there.
Cool. And we're going to talk more about your solo album in a couple minutes, Reminisce. But yeah. Was that the 12th track, Get Back, that ended up on Reminisce?
You know, actually, Get Back I recorded previously. That was recorded a while ago for my record. The 12th track was She Came In Through the Bathroom Window, which ended up as a bonus track for Japan.
I gotta get that.
Yeah, you can either get the Japanese release or, you know, maybe you can dig it somewhere on the internet.
That's great. Okay, so I'll tell you, my engineer here, Reggie, is told me that he actually attended one of your shows at the encouragement of our dear departed friend Dave Nolan. And he went to one of the Bowl Live run.
Yeah.
So he really enjoyed that experience, and we were talking a little bit about that run. And what can you tell me about that run? That is a 10-night run at the Brooklyn Bowl with lots of guest artists. It must have been an incredible residency.
Yeah, that was amazing. You know, the idea came about when they were opening, or even before. It was actually really a year before that. I was at the Allman Brothers show at the Beacon Theater. I ran into Pete Shapiro. He told me about the Brooklyn Bowl idea and how it was all coming together and how he'd like to do, you know, a two-week run there. And pretty much, you know, he just kept saying it. And once it was open, he called us up and he's like, let's do it. And, you know, really it came together fairly quickly. I started approaching different people that I knew were going to be in town and asked them if they'd want to come in. And then as the thing started happening, it started rolling, tons more people showed up, you know. Everyone from Derek Trucks and Warren Haynes to DJ Logic and Raul Midon and, all across the map, Talib Kweli, the Questlove from The Roots, Razel from The Roots, and it just keeps going. Every night we'd have surprise guests. Q-Tip was there. It was just kind of, you know, really, really an amazing experience. And I think we're going to do it every year. At least we plan to.
Yay!
It'll keep going. And we're actually putting together a DVD with kind of like the highlights from that. So you can. I think that'll be out in November. But if anyone who's interested, check out royalfamilyrecords.com, and we'll let you know when that's coming out.
Awesome. I can't wait for that release. The DVD release is going to be great. I've been listening quite a bit to the recorded download of those shows, and we'll be playing some of that tonight on the air.
Great.
So, yeah. And tip of the hat to Pete Shapiro, huh? He's always thinking for
taking
that run, and that's a great idea. And,
absolutely,
of course, the Brooklyn Bowl, kudos just for opening that place. And
yeah, that's amazing.
Do your roots go back to the Wetlands when he was involved with the Wetlands?
Oh, yeah. In fact, our first residency in New York, or one of our first residencies that we did, was at the Wetlands back then. And we had all sorts of different people opening for us. It was Robert Randolph, one of his first shows, you know, in the city. He was opening for us there. And we did everything from that to, like, Black Sheep and Dos Effects, the hip-hop guys from the 90s. And, you know, it was great. Just, you know, the whole idea of having all different types of people sit in with us. Because that's what we love to do. You know, we love playing trio, and we can do that all night. But we also love backing up different artists, from whether it's hip-hop or reggae or soul or whatever it is. We just love collaborating, and I think it's like a perfect vehicle for that, just being the three of us. So, it's a blast, and it keeps it fresh for us. The thing about Brooklyn Bowl was every night we were playing different material and learning different tunes, or just spontaneously coming up with things to play. Like, a lot of times, right before we'd go on, we'd find out someone was going to be there, and we'd throw out a tune and yell out the chord changes and hit it, you know? So... it was, you know, not the tightest at all times, but it was adventurous, you know. So we had a lot of fun.
Cool. And I'll tell you, I was talking to Reggie just before we got on the air here, and Reggie, of course, his roots go back to early Wetlands days and a lot of the hip-hop era. And I wanted to get Reggie on mic here and say hey to you, too.
Sure. Sure, yeah.
Hey, what's up?
What's up, Reggie?
Yeah, it's funny you should mention about the you was comparing the moment over at Brooklyn Bowl to Wetlands, because that's exactly what I was thinking about, because
it was
kind of not organized, but in a cool way. It was very spontaneous, but just people that were just so on point, you know, when they got on and, you know, they got on the stage and they dealt with it. So it was really cool professionals. So I thought it was really cool. So thanks.
Yeah. And you know, when it comes together spontaneously, there's an extra energy, because it's almost like we're watching it at the same time as it's going on, you know? Like, I was watching some of the DVD, and when O'Teal and Kofi Burbridge, we were hitting all these, like, things that we had never even thought about, never rehearsed. And, like, the look on his face, especially, but on all our faces, was just this, like, surprise that, oh, wow, you know, they know that little lick, or, like, people just hitting these things together that were totally not planned. And when the audience sees that, they get just as excited, you know what I mean? So it's like, it's a cool interactive kind of thing.
Totally. I felt that. I felt that exactly. You hit it on the head. So once again, I thought that was a really awesome. I think I definitely checked out. I forgot what day I went to check out that one of the sets, but it was awesome. It was really good. It was really good. It brought me back.
Oh, I'm glad you enjoyed it, man.
Now, that's Reggie Johnson, and of course, he's engineering for me today, but he also is one of the hosts on the Liquid Sound Lounge, which precedes Morning Dew here on WBAI Saturday nights from 7 till 9:30. Right, Reg?
Correct.
And then, of course, after Morning Dew comes the Underground Railroad, and that's with Jay Smooth, and the Underground Railroad is the best in hip-hop and related culture. And I thought, since Reggie was really there for the more or less the roots of the hip-hop era, as were you, thought you guys could rap on it a little bit, you know, going back to that era.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we saw so many people. Like, I was around when the Raucous Records label was, like, really booming, and that's how we first hooked up with Talib Kweli and Mos Def and Pharoah Monch, and, like, it was a really cool era when all those guys were collaborating and putting out like tons and tons of different projects and albums. And a lot of them are still performing, still doing their thing. But, you know, obviously the mainstream kind of thing has taken over for the most part. But, you know, hopefully, you know, real music in hip hop will come back. It seems to be coming back, as far as, you know, the Roots are obviously doing their thing, and a lot of artists are starting to use live bands and live musicians, which I dig, you know.
So, what do you think about one of the shiny moments that I remember for Wetlands, since you're going back there, besides the Raucous, which I totally agree, which was really, 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 really a good, great moment, was during the time of when the Roots were the backing band of the Black Lilies.
Oh yeah,
sessions,
the Black
and
Lilies.
Stuff.
Yeah,
and
Jill Scott, and all that.
That, you know, and people like Jill Scott was discovered as well. Yeah. And I thought that there was what I liked was is that it was a combination of not only just hip hop but soul. There was funk. Yeah. There was R&B. Sometimes there was rock elements in there as well. You know, just mix it up. Be spontaneous. You know, it was totally organic, like you were saying before.
Yep. I, you know, I was lucky enough to catch some of that too. And yeah, and like Erykah Badu and all these different people were coming through. Yeah. I mean, that was, you know, it was a great era. I feel like, you know, you keep thinking, you know, there, I don't really think anything like that has happened again. And it probably won't. I mean, there's different scenes bubbling and a lot of cool things happening. But yeah, I feel blessed to have been a part of that or seen a lot of that go down. You know, I definitely miss the Wetlands for sure.
I'm wearing a Wetlands T-shirt right now.
Oh yeah. Nice. Have you guys seen the documentary that they did?
Oh, it's wonderful. Yeah. The Wetlands
Preserved.
Wetlands Preserved. I think there's a website by such a name, wetlandspreserved.com, and a Facebook page too. So highly recommended that video for people to view the DVD. It's a fabulously entertaining and informative movie. A lot of laughs in it, and a lot of great music and great graphic work in that movie.
Yeah, it's really good. I ended up watching it on Sundance, a friend of mine called me. He's like, "You're on TV." So I turned it on, and I look like a baby there, man. It's really funny. I'm in there talking and stuff. It's really interesting. And Pete had some pictures that I saw recently of a bunch of us back then, like me with Derek Trucks and O'Teal and a lot of those guys, you know, right when I was first really getting, you know, Soul Live and getting, you know, my music thing together. And it's cool that a lot of that is documented.
Yeah, it's great. It's great DVD, great film. Really glad that it came out, and our dear friend Dave Nolan is also featured in it, and some great interviews. Yep. So let's move forward and talk a little bit about Reminisce, your solo CD. I just want to remind people that you're listening to Morning Dew on WBAI FM 99.5 on your dial, listener sponsored and commercial free, streaming globally on WBAI.org. I'm Bob O'Donnell, and as I said, this is Morning Dew. You want to talk a little bit about Reminisce?
Yeah, Reminisce is an album. I mean, I started working on that album in 2007, I believe. So it was a couple years in the making. I was doing it kind of in between different other projects, and it came together originally. I was writing a lot of vocal tunes, and some of those ended up on a record that Soul Live did called No Place Like Soul. And then a bunch of them later on ended up on Nigel's album. So my original concept for my solo record was going to do all these vocal tunes. And then I kind of steered towards, you know, okay, I do write a lot of lyrics, but I feel like, you know, if I'm going to go out on tour, I'm going to play my guitar. So I wanted to make a record that was really like guitar-oriented. So I ended up putting a couple vocal tunes on there, but ended up kind of like scratching the original idea and then going back and doing, you know, more instrumentals. And the reason I called it Reminisce in the end is when I looked back on it, I really was kind of paying homage to like different eras of guitar playing that I admired. And some of it's, you know, specific guys in mind, you know, like there's definitely like a Jeff Beck oriented track on there. And there's kind of like a Latin kind of Santana type of vibe. But I made sure that each of them had my own, you know, signature to it, and had my own sound kind of infused in there. So it's basically just a collection of different tunes that, to me, represent like my kind of coming of age as a guitar player. So that was it. You know, and it features a lot of the guys that I'm playing with all the time, from Lettuce, like Adam Deitch. Louis Cato plays bass on it. I played bass on a few of the tracks. Stu Brooks from the Dub Trio plays on it. Neil Evans and Alan Evans, of course, from Soul Live are on there. And the Shady Horns, Ryan Zoidis and company. And I think that's it. But it's all the usual suspects, as I like to say.
That's a great synopsis of this wonderful release called Reminisce by Eric Krasno. And I have to say, you just stole like most of my questions, and because I was going to say that, you know, there has been comparisons to Jeff Beck on this album. And as far as I'm concerned, Reminisce could have been the follow-up album to Blow by Blow. It's that good.
Right. I was listening to Blow by Blow and Wired quite a bit when I made the record.
It certainly stands up alongside it. Do you ever get any feedback from some of the fellas like Warren, Derek, Carlos, any of these guys who you know, you worked with or have influenced you?
Yeah, I mean, they've all given me really solid feedback, and there's a lot of respect there, which is it's very humbling, you know, to be around those type of people and meet them, and to tell, for them to tell me that they dig my music is just, you know, it's a dream come true, really. So
yeah,
it's amazing for me. You know, I really look up to those guys.
Yeah. And you know, you guys have jammed together oftentimes, Warren, Derek, yourself, and you can see the respect going back and forth up on stage. And like you said, the excitement in each of your eyes when the magic happens, you know?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So just to talk about Reminisce, some of the songs a little bit, Rollout is sort of, to me, like a 70s soul thing going on with great bass lines by yourself. Beautiful sax and flute work, I believe, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, Cochemia Gastelum.
Cochemia Gastelum, okay. Yeah. And he's also plays with the Dap Kings, with Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings.
Okay.
He also plays with who was I? He was part of Robert Walter's 20th Congress group.
Okay.
And he just put out his own solo record, which is amazing, actually.
Yeah, I'd like to hear that because his sax and flute work on Rollout is beautiful.
Yeah, he's really great.
And then, of course, Adam Deitch, your drummer, is in on the Reminisce project. Is I guess Chapter 2 is a vehicle, more or less, for your solo work.
Yeah, Chapter 2 came about when I was putting together my band, and I really wanted to have a name for it, especially once we started playing. I was like, wow, this is like its own band. But so I do plan at some point to make a Chapter 2 record, which will be probably more featuring Nigel singing, you know. But I want to make a band, you know, make a record with that band. But yeah, right now that's the vehicle for getting the music out there, and it's, you know, dubbed Eric Krasno and Chapter 2 right now, just because some of the members will change from time to time depending on the schedule.
Mm-hmm.
But
there are two vocal tracks on Reminisce, both by Nigel Hall, right?
Yep.
Be All Right and Manic Depression. Manic Depression is an ambitious song to cover. Was that daunting to you or Nigel when you were recording?
You know, it was that I'm a huge, huge Hendrix fan since I was a kid, and I was always playing Hendrix stuff for Adam Deitch, and he wasn't always the biggest Hendrix fan. I'd always like kind of be like, "Oh man, you got to hear this, you got to hear that," and then like finally, what that was kind of like him come. He came in one day and he's like, "I got an idea." And I was like, we were all impressed that he wanted to do a Hendrix tune because he wasn't always up on the Hendrix. And he kind of was like, "Oh, I've been listening to Band of Gypsies. I've been listening to Axe Bold as Love. I've been listening." So he came in. He's like, "I want to do this tune." So that was his idea to do the four-four arrangement. Because originally it's like a 6-8 feel. And he came in and was like, "Let's do it in four." And he kind of came up with that groove.
Very cool.
As soon as he started playing that group, we're like, "Oh yeah, that's it, let's do it."
And then Nigel plays some organ on Enhora Buena.
Yep.
That's a sort of a Santana sounding kind of a song, isn't it?
Yeah. And that one, I wrote that one kind of years ago. And that was one that I was thinking about writing lyrics to, but then once we had played it a few times live, we're like, "Okay, let's just cut it like this." That's how it ended up.
And would the song Tilt, if I said that reminded me of George Benson stylistically, would I be in the right direction there?
Yeah, that was like 70s George Benson kind of feel, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that one came together. We went to the studio and we were waiting for Deitch to, that was the day before we recorded a lot of the stuff. And Alan and Nigel and I got there early and we were bored. So we were like, "Well, let's just cut something now." So it's actually Nigel on bass, Alan on drums, and then I'm on guitar, and then Nigel overdubbed the key. So it's actually Nigel playing electric bass also on that one.
Huh. And then, of course, the album kind of wraps up with Up and Out being a rocker and Reminisce, End of the Movie, more of a reflective piece.
Yeah, that one I recorded by myself, and then I had Adam just kind of put the drum, add the live drums to it. But yeah, that one was just one that I was working on some acoustic stuff, which actually I'm still developing, and I'm going to record an all-acoustic album, or maybe it'll be an EP. And that was originally an acoustic piece, and then I kind of recorded it with, you know, the bass and the guitar and all the tracks separate. And that's my first time playing slide ever. And it was that was actually the first track I recorded for the record.
Ironic that it ended up being the last track on the
record. Yeah, the last track.
and called Reminisce, yeah.
Right.
I see that you played with Government Mule at Red Rocks recently.
Yeah.
That must have been something.
Yeah, amazing venue, and they were on fire that night. It was really, really great experience.
And I was lucky enough to be there when you sat in with the Derek Trucks Band and Ravi Coltrane at the prestigious Lincoln Center.
Oh, yeah.
That was quite a night.
That was a last minute. He texted me kind of like right before they were going on, and I was in a recording session, and I ran over there, and then he just pointed to the Les Paul that was on stage, because Les Paul had passed, I think, the night before.
Wow.
And he had a 59 Les Paul on stage, And he just pointed at it, and I'm like, okay. And I ran out there and played it, and like, you know, I had to try to dial in my sound, and the strap was like too long, and the, I was like, and I had to tune it out of E, out of E major, which is what he plays in. So it was like a weird, that was a, an interesting moment, because I like ran out there, I'm like, ooh, this is too low, and the amp, okay, and let me tune this thing, and then we got it, once I got it together, it was cool.
Yeah, well, all that technical stuff was lost on us. We were loving it. And
yeah, I mean, it all happened within, like, it was like the 20 seconds that seemed like an hour. You know what I mean?
I was there with Dave Nolan. I was there with Dave Nolan and Taper, Rabbi Yossi, and just very fond memory of that beautiful evening in New York City.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
And, of course, you recently sat in with the Les Paul Trio.
Yeah. Yeah, that was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, they invited me to do that up at the Iridium, which was, you know, where he played every Monday. And it was cool because, you know, that's, it was a legendary gig that I would go to and bring my friends to, and got to play Sunny, which is a tune that they always had played, and I always wanted to play that with them. So that was cool, and got to do a couple of my own tunes. So yeah, it was a blast.
So one of the incarnations that you're involved with that will be at the Terminal 5 on October 2nd at the Royal Family Ball will be Lettuce.
Yep.
Which is a cool project that you're involved with, a seven-person all-star collective originally formed in 1992. Pretty much you have deep roots with those guys, and I'd say that it sounds like a good argument for secondary education in music, no?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You guys came out of Berklee College of Music, right?
Yeah, we actually met at the five-week summer program when we were 15, 16.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's how long ago that was. And, yeah, we just stayed in touch, stayed together over the years. We're all very, really close friends.
Neil's in that band, right? Neil Evans?
Neil is now, yeah. He, originally, it was Jeff Basker was the original keyboard player, who is now actually like one of the biggest producers in music right now. He produces Beyonce, Rihanna, Kanye West, Jay-Z, pretty much all the top like pop and hip hop artists. So he's doing pretty well for himself.
So as deep as that band's roots run, you guys really kind of do it as a fun outlet, more or less, a few times a year.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically what it is. You know, we actually work together in different incarnations like all the time. Like in the we do a lot of studio work together for various different projects, but we come together, and usually, you know, now we're actually working on scheduling recording time to make the next record. We have a bunch of new tunes that we've written, and now we're about to get in the studio. So we've made two studio albums and one live album, and you know, usually what we'll do is, like, when the album comes out, we'll do a pretty extensive tour, and then we'll kind of do a few dates throughout the year, you know, depending on the demand and people's schedule.
All right. Well, listen, you were speaking with Eric Krasno from Soul Live, who will be appearing with Soul Live and Lettuce and other incarnations and many other bands at the Royal Family Ball on October 2nd at Terminal 5. Right, Kras?
Yep.
And thank you so much for this call. After I say goodbye to you in a moment, I'm going to ask you to stay on the line and give us a station ID. How's that sound?
Cool. Absolutely. All right.
Thanks so much for taking the time to call us. I know you're real busy.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. It was a real interesting, fun conversation to have, and I love your band. I have to say, I came late to the party within the last year or so, but I'm making up for lost time.
Appreciate that. Yeah. Right on.
All right. So hang on the line, and we'll just say thanks to Eric Krasno for this great interview about Soul Live and related projects. Make sure you check out Rubber Soul Live, the brand new release of phenomenal Beatles covers by Soul Live, and Eric Krasno's solo project Reminisce is a brilliant project that has been out for something like a year now. Is that right?
Yeah, it came out in April.
In April, okay. Great. All right, thanks a lot, Eric. Hang on the line
with
us. Thank you.